Hello, everybody.
I got busy chatting, as maybe you did as well, and realized we're 2 minutes past our start time. And you know that these sessions go by in a blink of an eye. So we're going to get started right away. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation today. And hopefully you are as well. So there's me on the screen. I'm Janelle Williams. I work as a literacy consultant at Oakland Schools, and I also serve as one of the co-chairs of Michigan's Disciplinary Literacy Task Force.
Morning, everyone. I'm Christina Carlin. I'm also a literacy consultant at Oakland Schools. I primarily work at the elementary level, so Janelle and I make a good team because our conversation today is going to go across K-12, but really excited to learn alongside all of you this morning.
You. You can see that the slides are available. There's a bit.ly link for you should you wish to follow along today. We do have some embedded hyperlinked resources that are in the slide deck, and it's also available through the conference materials that you've been accessing. So we're going to go ahead and dive in and get started. And as soon as you probably saw this session title, there were probably some emotions that bubbled up, because when we say PA 146, if I could measure all of your cortisol levels, I'm guessing it would go up. And I am here to say that this session is not going to teach you everything you need to know about PA 146. That's not the intention, okay? We want to really hone in and think about assessment implications specifically, because this is the Michigan School Testing Conference, right? So we want to go really small with our focus, and we want to think about PA 146 as being part of the ecosystem, okay, of what assessment looks like in your context. And we also want to think about the fact that we have a series of documents in Michigan that span from birth through grade 12 that also give us insights and are part of our assessment ecosystem. Okay, so we want to think about those in connection with one another. So take a moment, if you will, to turn and talk at your table. You maybe have some familiar folks, maybe you have some new to you friends at your table. Briefly introduce yourselves with your name, role, and organization, and then we'll bring you back together and we'll engage in a little bit of formative assessment to get a sense of who's in the room and levels of familiarity. But first, get to know the people at your table. Oh no! I heard the collective, oh no! Mostly it's sadness about the loss of coffee, but
yes.
All right, I'll welcome you back. And now let's get a sense of levels of familiarity with two different things. So the first question I'm going to ask, and you can indicate on a fist to five your level of familiarity. Fist would be not really familiar at all. Five would be, I should be up here co-presenting this session with you, Janelle. Okay. Yeah, come on up. So the first question is, what's your level of familiarity with the literacy essentials? Hold it up high and proud. Give me your fist to five. We got some fractions in the room. We got some folded fingers.
I don't really have
I'm loving it. I'm loving it. Okay, all good. Wherever you are is just perfect. You don't have to be a five to gain insights from this session. Okay, and then how about your level of familiarity with PA 146? Again, fist to five. Hold it up nice and proud.
I feel like every time I read it, I learn something new, so I'm going to give myself a four.
Yeah. Okay, and again, just like with the literacy essentials, wherever
like
you are is
way.
Just perfect, okay? All right, so we're going to hopefully help you throughout the session start to identify some literacy essentials practices that are connected to assessment. to consider components of MACS, components of an equitable assessment system, or CEAS, document, and explore alignment with elements of PA 146 related to assessment. Okay? We're actually going to have some hands-on work today that you can co-construct with the people at your table. So our whole goal, our whole theme for today is that we really want to be swimming in the same direction, whether we're talking about PA 146 or work that we're doing around the literacy essentials or work that we're doing around equitable outcomes for all students. All three of those areas of work are valid and important, but they need to be moving forward together in the same direction, or the result is chaos. Okay? So we're going to think about that today and explore it together. Do we have all of the answers for you? No, but we have some ideas that we hope to lift that hopefully feel supportive of you.
So I'm going to give a little bit of background around PA 146. Again, like Janelle said, we're not going to go over every detail, but wanted to make sure that we just have some layer of shared understanding here today. So PA 146 became a law in October of 2024. There were many iterations of PA 146, the K-12 Literacy and Dyslexia Law, that were in the works the previous 5 to 6 years. So this wasn't something new. It had been in the works in Lansing for several years. And those of you who are maybe more involved in dyslexia advocacy or in literacy in general might have heard of all those different iterations of the law. Michigan was one of the few states in the U.S. that did not have legislation addressing instruction for students with characteristics of dyslexia. So we are kind of bringing in ourselves up into the fold with the rest of the states that already had legislation around that. It does include unfunded mandates, which, going back to what Janelle shared earlier, I'm sure makes all of our cortisol levels go up, right? So lots of questions and wonderings about how to make all of these things come to life, but that's what we're here to do, is to create a space to collaborate and network and bring those ideas to the forefront. The majority of the requirements for PA 146 are for the 27-28 school year. So while we can't bring you back to this zen place of calm completely, knowing that we do have some time to think about the requirements of PA 146 should alleviate some of those worries that you might be experiencing. And as you might already know, the list of K-3 screeners and assessments and progress monitoring assessments were released on December 18th, 2025 by MDE, as well as the curricular resource list, Tier 1 curricular resource list for K-3 was also released. We should note, and it's very important to keep in mind, that there are also going to be upcoming windows where vendors can reapply. So those lists may hopefully change and have additions to them. So just keep them in mind. I was at a session yesterday, and the MDE staff rep that was there said that they're, what did she say, complete but not finished. And I was like, I'm not really sure what that means, but I'll go with it. So we do have that initial list of K-3 screeners, which there were two assessments on that list. We also wanted to talk a little bit about some misconceptions around the law, and talk about those as we move forward in thinking more specifically about assessment. So the law is not focused on diagnosing dyslexia. It's also not solely focused on teaching students with characteristics of dyslexia. So that's not the sole purpose of the law. So sometimes you might hear it being referred to as the dyslexia law. We're trying to be really intentional when we work with districts and PSAs and calling it the K-12 Literacy and Dyslexia Law, because it's really about, as you'll see on the right side there, it's about supporting improved outcomes for all students. So you might hear from teachers or from leaders or from district level administrators that are like, oh, well, it's just a small number of kids in our school, or like, I only have one student who's diagnosed with dyslexia in my classroom. This is the goal of the law is really to support improved outcomes for all students. So on the left side, you'll see there, it is focused on providing code emphasis instruction to address students that may be having difficulties learning to decode efficiently and effectively, as well as secondary consequences of dyslexia. So things like vocabulary, some social emotional needs that often are secondary consequences for students with characteristics of dyslexia. Dyslexia is a medical diagnosis of exclusion, so you're gonna see in the law, a lot of times them say characteristics, students with characteristics of dyslexia, because again, dyslexia is a medical diagnosis. It's not just about students with dyslexia, not just about students with IEPs, and it is not just about K-3 or early literacy. It does have implications for our friends in secondary. And it is a complete overhaul of the Read by Grade 3 law, or the third grade retention law. There are some key requirements that districts must meet. This is by no means an exhaustive list. Digging into the law, working with your ISD, and putting together a team to really understand the requirements is something we are supporting districts with at Oakland Schools. But some of the requirements are the use of evidence-based universal screeners for students in K-3, for all students in K-3, and for students in 4-12 who exhibit some specific academic behaviors. And the law really delineates what those behaviors are. Development of individualized reading intervention plans for 4-12. There's some small differences between what an individualized reading plan looks like for K-3 and for 4-12, but we're learning that maybe there isn't as much of a difference between those expectations as we once thought. Our understanding is evolving as we get information from MD along with yours. But students with reading difficulties in 4-12 will need an individualized reading plan. Another requirement is around professional learning, that all K-12 educators that are teachers of reading must receive professional learning around things like characteristics of dyslexia, secondary consequences, structured literacy, and evidence-based practices. The expectations for professional learning, that providing those assurances to MDE, that is for September 1st of 2027, so next year is a really critical year to ensure that you are making steps towards meeting those professional requirements for your staff. There's also requirements around instructional and curricular materials, implementation of a robust MTSS system, the use of district literacy coaches, and then some special requirements for English learners. At its core, what I try to reassure districts about when it comes to PA 146 is that a lot of the great work that's already happening across our state is in alignment with these requirements. So if you have been doing a lot of work with your teachers around MTSS at the district level, creating a strong framework, that is in alignment with the requirements of PA 146. If you have been doing a lot of work throughout your districts and your PSAs around evidence-based practices and the science of reading, you're already working towards these requirements. So while it might feel like a big undertaking, we're fortunate. We get to kind of take a peek into a lot of different systems throughout Oakland County and throughout the state in our other work. This is work that is happening. You're just deepening it and continuing it, maybe with a different focus. Maybe you're strengthening some areas that needed strengthening. But there's so many great things happening across our state with regards to literacy. This is going to be just to continue that good work. This is a timeline that MDE has published. We can provide a link to that, but you can see that the majority of the requirements are for the 27-28 school year. Everything that is in blue is an MDE responsibility, and everything that is in yellow is a district or PSA responsibility. So we're like, where are we at? see if I can point on this thing. Nope. Oh, yeah, I can. We're like right around, where are we? To the left? Right here. MDE has provided their list of Tier 1 curricular resources by January 1st. They just released professional learning guidance. So we're really like around right here. And so districts, again, thinking about assessments, need to be thinking about selection of assessments as you move into the 27-28 school year. So I felt like a boomer just now that I couldn't find the little laser thing, but as I get older, just had a birthday, so I'm feeling really old lately. So we also want to root our conversation today in the literacy essential suite. So when Janelle kind of checked in with you to see what your familiarity is, many of you are already familiar with the literacy essential suite. There's also math essentials, but we're really fortunate here in the state of Michigan to have some really clear tools to guide our work with regards to literacy instruction, both at the classroom level and at the school-wide or organizational level with those school-wide practices. So let's talk a little bit more. Did the disciplinary literacy one pop up like that on purpose just for you?
I didn't realize that Past Janelle animated it. That was just a little fun surprise for everybody.
Of course she highlighted disciplinary literacy.
Big kids need literacy too. But all of these are hyperlinked, so if there are any documents on there that are new to you or unfamiliar, you can click on it and take a look. Yeah.
And one of the things, for those of you who might be involved with literacy coaching, one of the things that Nell Duke always says to us when she comes and talks at the coaching quarterlies for K-5 coaches, she says, the literacy essentials were science of reading before science of reading was a thing. So if you're doing work that's aligned with these literacy essentials, you are doing the work of science of reading and those evidence-based practices.
I think that's a really, really important point. So I just want to pause. I mean, I know we're behind on our time. We knew we would.
A dramatic pause.
But there's a narrative out there that everything we've been doing up to today doesn't count or wasn't based in research, and that we need to suddenly, quote unquote, start doing the science of reading as if we hadn't been making decisions based on educational research all along. And I think it's really important that we're careful with our language. Just like we refer to this law as the K-12 literacy and dyslexia law, we also need to say, if we're hearing language like we need to start doing the science of reading, we need to get really curious about what that means. The person that's saying that, how are they understanding what is meant by the science of reading? And what is it exactly that they think we weren't doing previously? And those are really important questions, because terms get thrown around and people want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And we can't afford to do that. We have momentum on a lot of really great work that needs to continue, okay?
And just to further that soapbox, you don't do the science of reading. The science of reading is a body of research. Things like the disciplinary literacy practices, the essential practices, the content and principles of structured literacy, those are the actions that bring the science of reading, the neuroscience behind reading development to life. So I could go on and on about that, but I'll move forward. So we wanted to call out the essential instructional practices that are related to assessment, since this is an assessment-focused session and conference. So you can see that from all the way from birth to grade 12, there are literacy essential practices, which are those minimum standards of care in our classrooms that we want to see brought to life. There are essentials focused on assessment from birth through 12th grade. For birth through 5th grade, it's essential number 9. For 6-12, it's essential 8. We also wanted to name that there are essential practices in the school-wide and organizational practices that are also related to assessment. So the school-wide or organizational practices are those like systems-level practices that we want to see in place at the district and building level throughout our organizations. So essential practice number one, which is about having a strong literacy, or organizational practice number one, which is about having a strong literacy team that's committed to continuous improvement and ongoing attention to data, again, connected to assessment. Organizational practice number five, which is really about that MTSS framework, having a system for determining the allocation of support, and in addition to high quality classroom instruction. So again, those multiple layers of support in an MTSS framework. If you were to dig into that organizational practice, you'd see specific bullet points connected to assessment, as well as organizational practice number six, which is about those systems to assess and respond to individual needs. In grades 6 through 12, the organizational practices have the birth through fifth grade organizational practices, and then 6-12. So the organizational, school-wide or organizational practices that are focused on assessment for 6-12, same numbers, nice and easy. Number one, also about that leadership team. Number five, that academic support through those tiers of support. And then a system for responding to individual needs. So a nice thread to bring together those two organizational practices. We also wanted to name that the fourth and fifth grade instructional practices, essential instructional practices, have been updated. We're not going to go super deep into this, but did want to share that there have been updates to grades 4-5 essential practices. This is in alignment with the updates that happened for pre-K, K-3, and 6-12 that were done in 2023. And giving Nell Duke a whole bunch of shout outs because she's amazing. The reason why those updates are needed is because as research evolves, so do we. This timeline kind of shows the revision journey that happened at the state level with a team through MAISA. They developed a 4-5 work group and also partnered with Hanover Research to have a really intentional process for revising those 4-5 essentials. Lots of feedback loops with the 4-5 work group, as well as the early literacy task force to make those revisions over time. I think it took around 3 years for them to do that. These are the researchers who were behind those revisions, Dr. Laura Tortorelli, Dr. John Strong, and Dr. Miranda Fitzgerald, who were really doing kind of like that research dig into what revisions were needed, and all of the revisions were either for clarity, better alignment with K-3 and 6-12, or to better align with the research that's come out in subsequent years since their development. The importance of grade 4-5, as many of you know, is that national and statewide data indicates a critical need for better instruction post-COVID. That's no surprise to any of you in the room. It's also a really critical age and stage that we have a couple research articles cited on this slide that if you would like to learn more about, you can look those up. It's also, grades 4-5 are also a really key developmental period for integration of skills, so that multi-component instruction is more effective than isolated skills, so therefore the essential practices really need to reflect that. And then, of course, we know that building content knowledge is key for our students who might be struggling readers over time. That vocabulary and content knowledge sometimes becomes even more challenging for them and creates larger gaps. So now I'm going to hand things over to Janelle to talk about the components of an equitable assessment system.
Thank you. Okay, so that was our little kind of spiel to get us all grounded on literacy essentials and how they relate to this conversation. Now we want to shift gears a little bit and think about the components of an equitable assessment system document developed by MAC, and think about those 10 components. Obviously, all 10 are focused on assessment, right? But implications for
how they might be part of this conversation as well. And so we do have the entire document linked in, but what you're seeing here are just the headlines for them. Just quick check, can you raise your hand if you've spent some time in this SEAS document? Few folks. Okay, so this will be new for a majority of the people in the session, and the good news is you're going to have a little bit of time to dig in, okay? So it's great if most of you are a fist on the fist to five. You'll dip your toe in, and then I guarantee it's going to make you thirsty to dip back more deeply into that document as you move forward. But the title of it, I think, is really important. Components of an Equitable Assessment System. Right? What does that mean? And we're going to explore in a moment here how we're thinking about connections between these components and the literacy essentials. But just a quick plug for those of you that may support secondary, our Disciplinary Literacy Task Force has partnered up with MAC over the last 2 years for their Assessment Learning Network series, and we focus specifically on what equitable assessment looks like in secondary math, ELA, science, social studies, and the arts. And as you may know, the wonderful thing about MAC is that they make so many of their resources available for free. So I've hyperlinked some of the outcomes or the outputs from that series in case that's helpful to you. You can see there are some videos, there are some learning points, and we've already done the science webinar. I don't know if we've got the learning points up yet for that, but if you go to the Assessment Learning Network site, all of the resources after the sessions become available and uploaded there. So you can always bookmark and check back. Okay, but we want to think a little bit. We know that the SEAS document focuses on an equitable assessment system, but we also know that we want to be thinking about a balanced assessment system, and you probably heard that being kind of mentioned by our keynote earlier this morning. This might be a familiar graphic for you, especially if you take advantage of a lot of MAC's opportunities for learning. We really like this image because the biggest piece of this image is what? What kind of assessment? At what level? Classroom, right? And we know that's where we have the biggest opportunity to move student learning and proficiency, right? And that's where we talk about assessment for and of learning. We also know that assessment takes place at the district and school level, things like interim and benchmark assessments, and then of course we're all familiar with the state annual kind of summative assessments. So how are these layers of a balanced assessment system connected with the literacy essentials that Christina was talking about earlier? Here's how we're thinking about it and understanding how they relate to one another. If we're thinking about the essential instructional practices, that classroom level, that's where the practices 8 and 9 speak to assessment for and of learning at the classroom level. And those school-wide or organizational practices are the ones that talk about what the system should be doing in terms of assessment. And you may or may not know, but there's also a 10 district commitments document for folks taking up the essentials, and that could also be part of this conversation. So we want to kind of get to the point where we're connecting all the dots and you have a chance to get your hands dirty and explore some things. I'll just name here that there is a hyperlink to a SMORE flyer. I believe it's the SMORE flyer on assessment implications, on all assessment implications. We've been building a lot of resources at Oakland Schools so that we make sure that our language is aligned and that the resources we're sharing with our districts are aligned, and so we're happy to offer that to you in case it's useful so you don't have to recreate the wheel.
Looking at that screen, I don't think I linked it on that slide, so I'm going to add it right now. I think it's linked at the end, but I'll double check it. It doesn't look like a lot.
I think it is.
I think you did the yellow box now that I'm saying it. The yellow boxes mean, yeah.
Hyperlinked. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so we want to play with an example. We've mentioned a lot of fish, right? We mentioned the fish of the literacy essentials. We mentioned the fish of the SEAS document. We mentioned some of the elements of PA 146. we want to play with an example for you. So we pulled up here section 4 of PA 146 that talks specifically about MDE being responsible to provide. Are you hearing a lot of the background? It's just me? Okay, good. I didn't want you to have a bad experience. Okay. So we have here what MDE's responsibility is in terms of providing at least three valid and reliable screening and progress monitoring assessments. So that's their responsibility that you're seeing up on the screen. And then here, it's echoing how they will provide that, but then also that by no later than August 1st, 2027, each school district or any other iteration of that will update its selection to be in alignment with that. So many of you have a handout, and if you don't have a handout in front of you, it is available digitally for you to take and make a copy of. So you've got a couple different ways to access it. And we're going to use this to play with these ideas and connect the dots. And to help with that, Christina and I thought ahead and we were like, okay, well, if we were to connect all the dots, how would we make sense of this, right? What would that look like? And we thought specifically, if I could steal this so I can kind of hold it up, we were thinking specifically about the fact that in the instructional practices, and those of you that have the handout in front of you, you are looking at our example on the back. It's got lots of words, or you can access it digitally. And we were thinking about the fact that we pulled specific bullet points. And we started with the instructional and school-wide practices, and we noticed that there was a bullet point that said that the leadership team would maintain a comprehensive system for assessing children's strengths and needs that focuses on multiple points of data and keeps the best interest of children paramount in assessment, knowing the primary purpose is to promote equity by improving teaching and learning. We thought that bullet point felt important to us in connecting the dots. We also thought about that school, center, and program leaders would need to ensure that formal and informal assessment practices disrupt historical patterns of marginalization with respect to race, ethnicity, gender, ability, socioeconomic status, language, etc., and that assessments, interventions, and initiatives align with family and community values. You can see the rest of that bullet point. Those felt relevant to us, and they felt really important. And we connected that with, in the SEAS document, component 6, socially conscious assessment. This idea that we as educators are compelled to consider the ways that assessment design and practices can honor individual students' assets and funds of knowledge. And we thought about that in terms of the requirements of PA 146. And for us, we thought, it's important for us, if we are being compliant with the law and making sure that we have valid and reliable screening assessments and progress monitoring assessments for students, that we keep in mind that that requirement is a part of a larger ecosystem of assessment that at its heart should be honoring students' individual funds of knowledge and assets, and that the purpose of the assessment is meant for us to be not only lifting up our students, but being responsive to their needs. So for us, it felt important that we not just have this be a compliance conversation, but that any decisions that we're making, we're going to ground in that idea of socially conscious assessment that comes out of the SEAS document. Because it's very easy when we have legislation to go right to compliance and forget some of those other research-backed approaches that we know are important. So that was how we connected the dot, and we thought that the essentials and the SEAS document
could ground us in making sure whatever decision we're making around compliance with the law is rooted in those components. So we want to give you an opportunity to make some of your own connections. And we have on this and the next few slides some potential examples for you to play with. We've got a continued piece of Section 6. And so we're going to encourage you in your table group or even individually, we're going to make sure that each group has one of the components that you're going to play with, and you're going to explore. You might open up some of those literacy essentials documents that you're less familiar with. You might open up the CEES document and explore it. And we want to invite you to document connections in your group's note catcher on your handout, or maybe you want to make a digital version. How are you connecting these things? In other words, we're going to give you a compliance piece. For example, coaching, which has connections to assessment. You can see that the connections to assessment in the coaching section are in white. And you might say, okay, here's the compliance. Here's the thing we have to do. How can we root what we have to do in the right thing to do using the essentials and the CEES document? How can we connect those dots together so we can stay grounded and swim together in the same direction? So we've got coaching. There are some implications for coaches in terms of assessment. We also pulled an example in terms of interventions for English learners that have implications for assessment, and IRIPs, which obviously have implications for assessment. And so we're going to give you a little bit of time to play and explore. There's not a right or wrong way. So Christina, if you want to kind of go table to table and either say coaching, interventions for ELLs or IRIPs, and you'll be ready when you get that assignment. I'm going to be coming around making sure that you are clear on what you're going to be doing at your table groups and that you can access all of the resources that you need. And we'll play for a little bit and have some conversation and explore, and then we'll have an opportunity to share what you discovered.
Can I do IRIPs at this table? Okay.
Maybe you want to do, it's a poorly stated.
Can you do intervention for ELLs at this table, or did you have a particular one that you wanted to focus on?
Okay.
Why don't you focus on the section, the slide that gives the language of the law about intervention for English learners? Does that sound good? You guys want to do the literacy coaching requirements around assessment for K-136?
I'm so sorry.
I need to do these two.
No, I
thought you did. Oh, no, I'm right
no,
here.
I was just checking in.
Okay.
Okay.
Ready to do IRIPs? That slide. Can you do intervention for English learners at this table? Can you guys do coaching at this table? The coaching requirements? Okay.
What are they? That was not even the
same.
Myra.
Amira, yeah.
There may be more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you do the IRIP section, that slide? Thank you. Yeah.
Can you do
the coaching section at this table? Did you have a question about the list for assessments?
They're required to give three. We only have two right now.
They gave us two.
They're supposedly going to their iterations, their rotations of this. It's really interesting, and we've had some vendors that have said they're not going to apply with this. You know, there are going to be, I think, one open window just closed. Instead of being able to go with maybe what we had been using.
Usually we just do our benchmark, you know, we do our IRIP or an end the mm-hmm. range.
Yep.
So this is going to essentially have to be combined.
So we
I mean, we don't know.
It's K through 3, right? Just K through 3. For the dibbles or
the required is K three.
Right.
Yes.
But you have to screen for 412 for any students that have that list of academic behavior. So
have you seen that list of characteristics that's in the legislation for 412? I think you want to. So on the slide deck with that PA 146, the hyperlink, we pulled all of the language of the legislation that speaks specifically to assessment.
Mm-hmm.
When you see, just flag me down when I'm
my job. So
you guys doing okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, maybe. I
All right. Believe it or not, our time is coming to a close. And again, oh, thank you for the boo. That makes me feel like you actually kind of enjoyed your time here with me today. I enjoyed being with you too. Just to kind of reiterate, whatever you got to in your research is just perfect. Maybe you had some time to explore some of the literacy essentials that you hadn't seen previously. Maybe you had time to dip your toes into the C's document and see how it's laid out and think about how it might support you. Maybe you had some time to do a little reading and discussion around particular elements of PA 146. Regardless of any of that, I hope that it felt beneficial. Again, our goal, as you can see in the example that Christina and I created for you, is that at the end of the day, while we're being compliant with components of the law, we're going to make sure that we stay grounded in what we know is best in terms of balanced and equitable assessment practices and keep that kind of at the core of our decision making. And so hopefully you were able to connect some of those dots. And maybe you made some connections between those three. Maybe there were some tensions that arose for you, right? Maybe some things became clearer. And maybe there are some things that you know you want to learn next. Okay? We want to make sure that you are aware of some of the resources that could be helpful to you. The first one is a link to what we call our dashboard of resources that we've been working hard at Oakland Schools to create.
It's a link to the S'more about assessment.
Oh, it's a link to the S'more about assessment? Okay, thank you.
Of course, we should have loaded it before.
We've linked a lot of things, but we'll just fly back to it. But know that that's there. Of course, the literacy essentials, the K-12 literacy and dyslexia law in full. And of course, a link to Michigan Assessment Consortium's website. Great work from all of those groups.
Mm-hmm. We have just about 10 minutes left, and we did want to just name in that some more that's up there at the top. At Oakland Schools, we've tried to develop tools to support our districts and PSAs around PA 146. So that is a link to the assessment in IRIP's, the assessment and screening some more that we developed. That some more gives you all the language in the law that is related to assessment. Mm-hmm. It's not all the language of every section of the law. It is just a tool around assessment. So when you're looking at that, please keep that in mind. So it has copied and pasted all the components of the law related to assessment. And then at the bottom of that some more, there's some additional resources, including what Janelle just referenced, which is like what we call our dashboard of resources, where we have everything compiled in one spot. So we have a some more about professional learning, a some more about individualized reading plans, a some more about literacy coaching. And we also have links to some other outside resources like things developed at MAISA. So when you're looking at this, that some more, it is everything related to assessment. And then if you go to the bottom of that some more, you'll see a link to just a collection of resources, some of which were developed at Oakland Schools by our work group, and some of which were developed by other organizations. So if there's something that you have more questions about, or if you're having trouble navigating any of those links, Janelle and I will stick around and can answer any questions that you might have.
Yeah, thank you for lifting that. And there is, I know that as I was going around and talking to some folks, there are a lot of questions about implications of this law at the secondary level, and so there is a SMORE flyer that pulls out just the language around secondary. So I'm wondering in our last couple of minutes if there might be some folks that might be willing to share maybe just one thing that became clearer, one thing that you'd like to learn about next, a connection that you made across the three documents. What's bubbling up for you as a result of the time that we've had, brief although it was, the time that we've had together today? Think for a moment, and we'll see if we get some folks that are brave enough to share.
I'll channel my inner Vanna and
okay.
Walk around.
Wonderful, yes, because we have to use the microphone. So what's something that became clearer, or a question, a next step, something that you'd like to learn more about, a connection that you made across the three?
This is where we awkwardly look at people.
All right, we have our first
brave
volunteer.
Oh, awesome, thank you.
So we talked as a group, and we discussed the coaching that has to come along with this, and the limitations or the barriers that we're having. But we talked about the importance of building administrators to be coaches, to be more leaders in the academic realm. So instead of, like in my district, we had to cut a lot of our literacy coaches because they were grant-funded positions. And so we were talking about how we could backfill and really bolster these things. And so we talked about, let's train up the principals to be more instructional coaches so that they can lean in so it feels less punitive and it's more day-to-day, boots on the ground, and led at the building level.
Thanks for lifting that. And we did have some questions about that district literacy coach language in the law. Even though it's written as a singular person, MDE is interpreting that as that there can be more than one person that's fulfilling all of the elements of that job description. As long as you can indicate that all of the responsibilities of the district literacy coach are being taken care of within your system, that's still considered being in compliance, right? Because when you look at the language of the law and what that district literacy coach is responsible for, it's a big list of things, right? Probably not feasible, especially in a large system, for that person, one person, to fulfill all of those. So thank you.
I just appreciated you laying out the different resources to use in this document of making the connections, because we have spent a lot of time and energy checking boxes and making sure we're fulfilling all the elements of PA 146. But I think to be able to help teachers visualize that it's still grounded in really good instructional practices. And like you said at the beginning, it's not about things that we weren't doing or were doing, but being able to help them to visualize and make connections between the good literacy essentials that they already know, the assessment skills they already know, and then making sure that we're keeping those while we're implementing PA 146 as well.
I think that's super important that we want, of course there's a compliance element to this, but in whatever way we can to embed this into the work that's already happening or that we already plan to happen that is driven around your district or your PSA data, that's going to make it much more meaningful than just checking a box that we're in compliance. Mm-hmm. Other connections or tensions or things that you want to learn more about?
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming and spending time talking about a law, which isn't
so fun.
you know, a big draw, but clearly you had some questions. That's why you came in the room, and hopefully you got some insights and maybe some answers or maybe at least some next steps. So thanks for coming to play with us. Hope the rest of your day is great. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.